Today's shiur is Masechta Babas with Daf Kuf Nun Ches. We will begin on Daf Kuf Nun Ches on an Aleph at the Mishnah. Says the Mishnah, Nafla Bais Alov Al Ishtoi. The house fell both on him and on a husband and a wife. The Rashbam explains that the Mishnah is referring to a situation that this couple that unfortunately passed away in this building collapse had no children. Because, explains the Rashbam, if they had children, there would be no discussion. The children are the Yarshim, both of the father and the mother. And even though the father may have their joint children are their Yarshim, but even though the father may have other children, other sons who are his Yarshim, and the mother may have other sons who are Yarshim, according to the Rashbam, since their joint children are certainly Yarshim here, whereas the husband's children or the wife's children, as we will learn, may or may not be Yarshim. Therefore, says the Rashbam, our Mishnah's situation and the psak that we're going to learn in the Mishnah would not be relevant. We would certainly award this Yerusha to their joint children. Our Mishnah refers, says the Rashbam, to a situation where the husband and wife did not have children together, and therefore his Yarshim are his children or his brothers that are not related to his wife, and his wife's Yarshim are her children or her father or her brothers who are not related to the husband. Tosfos disagrees. Tosfos says that it could even be speaking about such a situation. So Nafla Bayis Lova Lishtoi, the house collapsed on this couple, Rachmanot Tzlan, and that is a question. Yarshi Abal Oimrim Isha Meis Rishin, that the wife died first, Vachka Meis Abal, and then the husband died. And as we learned, if a wife dies first, her husband is Hayyarish, and therefore, according to their version of what occurred here, the wife passed away first, he yarshined all of her assets, and now when he died, his Yarshim become the owner of these assets. Yarshi Isha, whereas the wife's Yarshim claim, Oimrim Baal Meis Rishon, that the husband died first. And even though, as we just said a moment ago, the husband is the Yarish of the wife, but as we learned, when is the husband the Yarish of the wife? Only if the wife predeceased him. But if the husband dies before the wife, then the husband is not the Yarish of the wife. And according to their version, the wife's relative's version, the husband died first, and then Vakach Meisi Isha. And now we therefore have a question, how do we divide the Yerusha here of the wife? How do we divide the wife's Yerusha? Before we speak about how we divide the wife's Yerusha, we need to identify, as the Mishnah will discuss, exactly what kind of assets would the wife have that should be under discussion. And as will become evident in learning the Mishnah and in the Gemara, there are really three types of assets that the wife would have here. There's the ksuba, the chi of ksuba that a husband has to his wife, that if the husband dies before the wife, his estate has to pay the ksuba, and therefore according to the version that she died second, she's entitled to the ksuba. Also, there's nechse tzoyin barzel. Nechse tzoyin barzel means assets that she brought into the marriage that are evaluated, assessed at the time of the marriage, and that assessment is put into the ksuba. And if he should die or divorce her, that value has to be given to her no matter what. And then there are the nechse malug. The nechse malug are assets that really belong to her. Just as long as they're married, he eats the peiros, eats the benefit that is accrued from those assets. So those are the three types of assets that a wife would own, that the debate of who died first, the husband or the wife, are relevant in identifying how to dispose of these assets. So there's a machlokes what to do. We divide it, We don't know who died first, who died second. Yachloiku. Obeisel oimrim, nechasim b'cheskasim. And as the Rishonim explain, the machloikus of Beisham Beisel is to be viewed as follows. Beisham is of the opinion that momen amut b'safik, we have here a safik, what to do with this, with these assets. Yachloiku. Divide. We don't know what to do. Whereas Beisel says, the operating principle we always work with is hamoitzi b'chaveroi, all of Haraya, and therefore Nechasim b'chaskasin follows that principle of hamoitzi b'chaveroi, all of Haraya. Interesting to note that the Rishonim say that according to Beis Shammai, we divide everything that identified a minute ago that would be the wives if the wife died second, if the wife died after the husband. Included in that is the ksuba. That according to Beis Shammai, she's entitled to half the ksuba. Which opens itself to a number of interesting questions that the Rishonim discuss. One halacha, a gemara we learned in Masechta Ksubas, is that the halacha is that a wife, after a husband dies, may not get remarried for 3 months. Known as the concept of hafchana. Because we're concerned that she's pregnant, and we want to be sure who is the father, the paternity of any such child. So she's not supposed to get married for 3 months. Here she didn't make it for 3 months. Because no matter what happened, the husband and wife tied very close one after the other. So the question is, she's not entitled to a ksuba because she never lived 3 months after her husband died, even according to the version that she died after the husband. So why would she get the ksuba payment? From here we see, say the Rishonim, that even though a wife may not get remarried for 3 months after her husband passes away, that has nothing to do with the halacha that she's entitled to the ksuba if her husband dies before her. And therefore, according to Beis Shammai, she's perhaps in this situation entitled to the ksuba, and even though she died right after he did. Furthermore, we learned in Masechta Ksubas that a wife may not collect the ksuba unless she makes a shvua that she was never paid a ksuba. And the Gemara Masechta Ksubas explained the reason being, Chashinin Shemet Srara Atvasei. We're concerned that maybe she, during their marriage, took money towards her ksuba payment. And otherwise, she can't collect the ksuba. So therefore, asked Rishonim, how could Beis Shammai suggest that she should be entitled to a ksuba payment? She can't make a shvua. She's dead. So I saw a number of answers in Rishonim to this question. One answer in the Rishonim is that even though the Gemara Masechta Ksuba says that a wife does al pi din have to make such a shvua, the husband, when the husband and wife get married, has a right to waive that requirement. And that's the situation that Amish is referring to, where the husband told the wife when they got married, if I should die before you and you'll be entitled to collect the ksuba, you will not have to make a shvua. Another explanation given by the Rishonim is, where is there a chashash that she took money towards a ksuba payment while they were still married? That's only in a situation where the husband did not specifically designate a piece of property to be mortgaged, that should be the property used to pay for the ksuba. But if the husband identified a specific property that should be used for the payment of the ksuba, There the halacha would be that she's not entitled, that she could take that property. The fact that because we don't have to assume that she took perhaps other money for the ksuba payment, they identified a piece of property that's where she'll collect from. That's the second pshat. A third pshat is, where did Chazal say that a woman has to make a shvua that she didn't take payment for the ksuba? That's in a situation, explained the Rishonim, where a husband and a wife, the husband traveled off to Medina Sayyam, and there's a concern that while the husband wasn't here, she took a ksuba payment, not rightfully. That's not the case of our Mishnah. The case of our Mishnah is referring to a terrible tragedy. Husband and wife were in a building, and the building collapsed. They were perfectly happily married. There's no reason to assume that the wife would take a ksuba payment. Why would we assume that? So there, the Chazal never made a chiyuv shvua. Since Chazal in such a situation never made a Chiyuv Shvuah, the din is that even though now she can't make the Shvuah, she's unfortunately not here, she's dead, her estate could collect the Ksuba. That's Beis Shammai's opinion. However, Beis Hillel's opinion is Nechasim B'cheskasim. And we're going to explain the Mishnah the way the Rashbam and most Rishonim explain the Mishnah. The Ksuba is Becheskas Yorsher Baal. If Beis Hillel says, as we said a moment ago, there are three types of assets that a wife could be owner of, Ksuba, Nechse Tzoyim Barzel, Nechse Melug, now our Mishnah is going to identify what is the halacha, who is the muchzik, Nechasim Becheskasim, who is the muchzik of each one of these types of assets. And therefore the Ksuba, says the Mishnah, the Becheskas Yorsher Baal. The husband certainly is the owner of that asset, because until she dies, until he dies before her or divorces her, the ksuba is by him. That's why he's the muchzik on the ksuba. Nechasim and nechnasim yotzvima. Again, this is the way the Rashbam explains the Mishnah, which means the nechsim alug abecheskes yarshav, which means in her family, because she, as I explained earlier, is the owner of the nechsim alug. Asked Rishonim, how can we say that she's the owner of nechsim alug? That she's the free and clear owner of the Nechsim Alug, or Hayarshim, actually. Isn't the halacha, asked the Rishonim, as we've discussed so many times, that if a wife were to die before the husband Yarshins the Nechsim Alug. So shouldn't that create a situation that the Nechasim are Becheskas Yarshay Habal? So Rishonim to this question too, or for many reasons, Tosfos discusses this. One answer that's given is that the halacha that we learned, we actually discussed this as a machlokes Rishonim, the halacha that a husband yarshins about a wife is only midrabbanan. That's not a din d'oraisa. That's why the fact that he is the yoyrish of the nechsim alug cannot create a situation that he is the muchzik in them. According to the Rishonim, that the rule that a husband yarshins a wife is midrabbanan, how will we understand this Mishnah, given the question that Tosfos asks? So here too there are a number of answers. One answer is that it's not like a regular Yerusha. A regular Yerusha, a Yerush is a Yerush. However, here, he only yashins her if she dies before him. So there isn't a full-fledged case of Yerusha. And therefore we can't consider it Nechasim Becheskas Yerusha Ebal. Another explanation I saw is that this Yerusha, and we've said this concept, we've said the Svara when we learned the previous parak many times. The Svara of Yerusha, is Yerusha is based on a relation. And that's why when we learned the halachas of Yerusha, the closer relative you are, the closer you are in the line of succession to receive the Yerusha. Whereas the halacha that a husband yashins a wife has nothing to do with being related. It's a new concept that creates that din, the fact that they're married. So the regular din of Yerusha don't apply. A third pshat, all based very similar, is that the halach is as follows. If there's a son, that we learned that the son is a Yerush of the father, a son can't say, I don't want to be Yerush of my father. You're a Yerush. You have a right. If your father dies, you want to give away your Yerush to somebody else. You want to be Mafka Yerusha. It's fine. But you can't say, I'm not the Yerush. The Torah made you the Yerush. You can't not be the Yerush. A son can't disinherit himself. A husband can. If a husband says, before they get married, while they're married, I don't need your Yerusha, he says to his wife. The halach is that he won't be the Yerush. So it's obvious that he's not a real Yerush. Because a real Yerush can't make that kind of a statement. And that's why the fact that the husband is the Yerush of the Nechsei Melug doesn't mean, the fact that the husband is the Yerush of Nechsei Melug doesn't mean that he's the Muchzik. So now, the way we learned the Mishnah according to the Rashbam, again, we're going to learn the Gemara that way too, is that our Mishnah taught us that, according to Beis Hillel, Nechasim Becheskasim, and the only question is, who is the Muchzik in each type of asset? And then the Mishnah says, regarding the Ksuba, the husband's the Muchzik. Regarding the Nechsim Alug, the wife's family are the Muchzakim, and the Mishnah didn't discuss the Nitzei Tzayin Basel, which will be the subject of the Gemara. That's the way the Rashbam and most Rishonim learn this Mishnah, the Gemara, and as I said, that's how we're going to learn also. However, there are the Baal HaMor learns the Mishnah differently. And the Baal HaMor says, the way to understand the Mishnah, is that the Nitzei, the Diksuba, is certainly the Cheskes Yorshei HaBaal, so to the Nitzei Tzayin Basel. And our Mishnah is discussing what is the din on the Nitzei Milug. Again, we're not going to learn that pshat. So now, ask the Gemara, the Nitzei Tzayin Basel, which our Mishnah didn't discuss, what is the din? Rabbi Yochanan Amar b'Cheskes Yorshei HaBaal, the husband gets the Tzayin Basel. The husband gets the Nechsei Tzayin Basel. And as I saw a beautiful explanation from Shmuel Rozovsky, why is the husband considered the Muchzik in the Yorshei HaBaal? He says as follows. He says, what do we explain is Nechsei Tzayin Basel? That the wife brings these Nechasim into the marriage, and that, and they're assessed at a certain value, and that value, the wife or her is entitled to if they divorce or the husband dies before her. How do we look at that payment? Says Rashun Rozovsky. The way we look at that payment is like a peron, like a bill. A bill, you're not obligated to pay a bill until you get the bill. If I don't get the bill, I'll never have to pay it. Here, since the wife, or in our case, the wife's yorshim, can never claim that there's really a bill, that this money is due to them, because she might have died, the wife might have died before the husband. That's why the money is considered muchzik b'yorshei HaBaal. Asks Tosfos, if we're saying that the Nechsei Tzayin Basel are treated halachically, according to Beis Hillel, as the same way as the Ksuba, so why does our Mishnah not group the Ksuba and the Nechsei Tzayin Basel together? Says Tosfos, that even though Alpidin, halachically they're treated the same way, but as we have been explaining, the lomdus, the reasoning why the ksub is considered becheskes yorshei HaBaal and the nechsei tzayin basel are considered becheskes yorshei HaBaal are very different reasoning. That's why the Mishnah doesn't group them together. And the same will say according to Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar becheskes yorshei Isha. She is the owner of the nechsei tzayin basel. She brought them into the marriage. And again, why isn't grouped together with nechsei milug? Because nechsei tzayin basel and nechsei milug are not the same. Since we don't know how to treat the Nechsei Tzayin Basel, Becheskes the husband's family, or Becheskes the wife's family, Yechloiku. We should divide them. The Tana came to the Bekapara. Both of them have fear claims. The Loch is Yechloiku. Continues the Mishnah. Nafal Habayis Alav Val Imoy. Here too, there was a mother and a son together in a house that collapsed. And again, explain the Rashbam that this woman, number one, was a widow. So she doesn't have a husband who would be her Yairish. Furthermore, there are no other, Rachel had no other children. That's why, the Rashbam calls her Rachel, so I'm using that name. This woman has no children. And since she has no children besides this son who is with her in the building, then now we have a debate where she has Yarshim, her Yarshim are her father or her brothers, and he has Yarshim, her son, because although she is his mother, he has paternal brothers who are not related to his mother, the widow, who are his Yarshim. For says the Rashbam, very similar to what we began the shiur with today, says the Rashbam, if this woman had other children, so those children are both Yorshim of her and him, they're related to her and they're related to the son, they would have first claim. And because of that, the Rashbam, to keep it simple, says that this mother, this widow, had no other children besides the son. There's the mother Rachel and the son Yosef. It's exactly the case that the Torah speaks about. And Yosef had paternal brothers, Reuven, Shimon, all the other brothers, there's no Binyamin. And now the question again comes up, was she and he were in the building together, the mother and the son were together in the building, and the building collapsed? How do we what do we do? Here says the Mishnah, everybody is in agreement that since they have equal claims, the son's Yarshim and the mother's Yarshim, what we should do is Yachlaiku. Amar Bekiva says Bekiva, Moide Ani Bezu, Shenachasim Bechaskasim. Here I hold Nachasim Bechaskasim. Who is Bechaskasim? The Gemara will explain in a moment. Ask the Rishonim, what does the Mishnah mean with the words Amar Bekiva Moide? Who is he Moide to? So some Rishonim say that the reason Rabbi Kiva uses the words Moide, since the Tanakhama used the word Maida, so Rabbi Kiva also uses the word Maida. That's how some Rishonim explain our Mishnah. The Rashi in Baba Metzia says an interesting pshat. Rashi in Baba Metzia says that Rabbi Kiva was a Talmud of Beis Shammai. And since Rabbi Kiva was a Talmud of Beis Shammai, in the previous Mishnah, what did Beis Shammai say? Yachloiku. Beis Hillel said, Nechasim b'cheskasim. Says Rabbi Kiva, I, who am a Talmud of Beis Shammai, and therefore in the previous Mishnah, Paskin Yachloiku, here I will agree to Rabbi Kiva, here I will agree to Beis Hillel, then Nechasim b'cheskasim. Tosfos is very troubled with this pshat. Because Tosfos says, we know we have a rule throughout Shas. Halacha k'Rabbi Kiva m'chavei roi, v'lo m'chavei rov. We follow Rabbi Kiva's opinion when he's arguing with a yachid, with an individual. We don't follow Rabbi Kiva's opinion when he's arguing with a group. If Rashi is saying that Rabbi Kiva was a Talmud of Beis Shammai, will we be following the opinion of Rabbi Kiva with the halacha follower of Rabbi Kiva, who's a Talmud of Beis Shammai, that we all follow Beis Shammai's opinion throughout Shas? That's why Tosfos doesn't like this pshat. Amar ben Azai says ben Azai to Rabbi Kiva, Achalukim adam etzdarim. In the previous Mishnah, as we explained, there was a machloikus Beis Shammai Beis Hillel what to do. Beis Shammai said, Yechloiku, Beis Hillel said, Nechasim b'cheskasim. We finally have a Mishnah, says Ben Azai to Rabbi Kiva, where they're in agreement. El Shabbos l'chakul anus ha-shavim. So here with Baruch Shem, Beis Shammai Beis Hillel agree. So now you want to create a machloikus? I can't accept that, says Ben Azai to Beis Shammai. To Rabbi Kiva. So Rabbi Kiva said, Nechasim b'cheskasim. But Rabbi Kiva didn't say, who's chazakah? Rav Ilam b'cheskas Yarshayim. It's considered by the mother. Rav Zeira Amar, why is it considered by the mother? Because she was the original owner. When she died, the assets were in her possession. They weren't in the possession of her Yarshim. Rav Zeira Amar b'cheskas Yarshayim. And particularly, according to the way the Rashbam that we quoted learns the Mishnah, this is very understandable. Because what the Mishnah is saying is that since the Yarshe HaBen, since the son, and he was the only son of this woman, was in place, was there to be her Yairish, since he was there to be her Yairish, the Halach already looks at it as if it was his Chazaka. And the Rambam adds, since most women get married, and when most women get married, they get married and have children, and their children will yarsh them. That's why we view it as if it's in her, it's as if it's already in his chazaka. That's the way Rabbi Sazalman explains the Rambam. Ki kfalak Rabzeira, when Rabzeira moved her to Sroel, kom b'shitzad Rabila. He changed his position, he changed his opinion and agreed with Rabbi Ila's position. And Rava changed his position, and when he came to this role, he followed the opinion of Rav Zeira. Rav Zeira said, why did I change my opinion? Because I came to this role, and a famous Gemara, Shema Mino, Avir the Yisrael Makim. And at this role, you get smarter. And even though in Chutz Loritz, I held B'chaskas Yar She'aim, at this role, opens up wisdom, and I came to the recognition that I was wrong. Tamar Amabaya, Hoyal V'Huchz Kanachal B'Shevet. Since she is the owner, it's in her Shevet, that's why it's considered B'Cheskes Yarshei. So Gemara here says, Avir Da'ar Machim. The Avir V'Tisrael makes you smarter. many different explanations. I saw Rishonim and Achronim. Why? One pshat that I saw is that Eretz Yisrael was the only place in the world that wasn't affected by the Mabul. The Mabul brought a bilbul to the world, but it didn't hit Eretz Yisrael. Another pshat that I saw is that the climate, the Rishonim said this already, the climate of Eretz Yisrael is a better climate, and a good climate is conducive to success in learning. Another pshat that I saw is that Moshe Rabbeinu, we know, didn't enter Eretz Yisrael, but Moshe Rabbeinu was given the opportunity to see all of Eretz Yisrael. And when Moshe Rabbeinu's holy eyes saw Eretz Yisrael, it brought a kedusha into Eretz Yisrael that Avir Derer Machkim. And yet a fourth pshat that I saw is that we all recall the parasha in the Torah that Avraham Avinu did not allow Yitzchak to go out of Eretz Yisrael. Why? So the Mepharshim explain, because Eretz Yisrael is a place where you could have more Yerushmayim. Chutz La'aretz, you could have maybe more, you could have a Havas Hashem. But Yerushmayim belongs in Eretz Yisrael. And we know that Yitzchak is Pachad Yitzchak. He represents Yerushmayim. And therefore Yitzchak belongs in Eretz Yisrael, the place of Yerushmayim. Chachma travels together with Yerushalayim. And therefore in Eretz Yisrael, you could avir the aramach. If so, ask the Mepharshim, we have Talmud Bavli and Talmud Yerushalmi. Why do we learn Talmud Bavli? Why do we follow the halacha of Talmud Bavli if avir the aramach? Mepharshim say, because the Talmud Bavli was written after the Talmud Yerushalmi, and we always follow klal and halacha as halachasik basroi. So the Bavli saw the Yerushalmi didn't see the Bavli, and that's why we follow the Bavli and learn the Bavli. Furthermore, the Yavit says, the Gemara says, cherev al abadim, that a person is not supposed to learn Torah alone. He's supposed to learn Torah with a Rebbe, with a Chavrusa, with a Chabura. However, says the Yavit, interestingly, since our Gemara says, avira da ara machkim, part of avir da ara machkim includes that you can learn Torah alone in Eretz Yisrael. The Chassam Sofer says a chiddush. The Chassam Sofer says, when our Gemara says that avir da Eretz Yisrael machkim, it's such a powerful statement that even a goy in Eretz Yisrael is smarter. That's avir da ara. Mepharshim explained, with this we could understand some nusach of tefillah that we say. In benching we say, Eretz Toiva Urechava. Why is Eretz Yisrael called Rechava? Because in Eretz Yisrael we have Rechavas Hadas. Rechavas Hadas means that we have the mental capacity to understand Torah more than we can in Chutz La'aretz. Furthermore, the Mepharshim say that in the Dayenu, by the Seder, we say, Ilu Nosun Lanu Asa Torah, V'lo Hichnisonu L'Eretz Yisrael Dayenu. So Mepharshim asks, what's the connection between Torah and Eretz Yisrael? But according to Al Gemara, it's very understandable. Because Al Gemara is teaching us that the Torah of Eretz Yisrael is a whole different Torah than the Torah of Chutz La'aretz. Avir der Machkim. So we say, Ilu Noslan as a Torah. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have given us the Torah, V'loi Noslan as Eretz Yisrael, where we could grow in our Lim and our Torah, Dayenu, we'd be satisfied. Alachas Kama V'Kama, that we have both, that we have the Torah, and we have Eretz Yisrael, that really help us succeed in our learning. There's a fantastic vart. David Emes, on one of his trips to Eretz Yisrael, met Rav Kook. And he asked him, the Gemara here says, Avir Eretz Yisrael Machkim. So he said, what makes Eretz Yisrael, what makes you so smart by being in Eretz Yisrael? He said, because in Eretz Yisrael we know the rule of Siyog L'Chok Mishtika. That what makes you smart? You don't answer. That's what makes Eretz Yisrael makes you smarter. But I saw pshat based on that conversation. You know, we say every day in Krishma, L'man Yivu Yimechem Mevenechem, Al Adoma. And the question is, the Gemara says, Ikas, there was a situation where somebody saw Ikas Sabah B'Bavel. There were elderly Jews in Chutz La'aretz in Bavel. Tom of Omar said, how could it be? You only have a Riches Yom in Eretz Yisrael. How do they have a Riches Yom in Chutz La'aretz? So he answers, Akdume Beknishta, since they come to Shul, that's how they had a Riches Yomim. So the Mashar, famous Mashar, explains, because since the Gemara says, I see the Bati Knesiois and Bati Midrashis from Chutz Laretz to go to Eretz Yisrael, so even if you're in Chutz Laretz, but you're in the base of Knesses, you're in the base of Medrash, it's like you're in Eretz Yisrael. But now I saw a Nupshat. The Medrash says that every person is given a certain number of words he could say in his life. And once he uses up his allotment, he leaves the world, except for words of Torah. Words of Torah are not in that count. So that's what he asked. How do we have old people in Chutz Laretz? So he answered, because he sits in Beis Medrash. So all he talks is Divrei Torah. Somebody who just speaks Divrei Torah has a Riches Yamin. So they said, why? Because somebody who speaks Divrei Torah is like the Jews in Chutz Laretz, the Jews in Eretz Yisrael, that don't waste their time with not speaking anything else but Divrei Torah, because the Yidden Eretz Yisrael, like the Yidden, the Jews in Chutz Laretz that learn Torah and don't spend their time with foolishness, are like the Jews that Rav Kook identified that have the Chachma of Siyag L'Chachma Shtika. Omar ben Azai. So ben Azai said to Bekiva, Ala Chalukim Anu Mitzdarim. We're upset about where there was a disagreement, and now you're coming to add. Omar Rav Shmuley Oda. Omar ben Azai. Omar Rav Shmuley Oda Omra. Says Rav Shmuley that Oda said, Ben Azai Tamut Chavad Rav Kiva Hava. It's obvious from our Mishnah that Ben Azai was a Talmud, but a colleague also of Rav Kiva. The Kamalei Shabasa. He spoke to him direct. And you don't speak to a Rebbe in the first person, you only speak to him in the third person. By speaking to him directly, it's a proof that he was a Talmud Chaver. What is the definition of a Talmud Chaver? So I saw a number of Pshatim in the Rishonim. Some explain, Mepharshim explain, that a Talmud Chaver represents a person who originally started off as a Talmud of this Rebbe, but then he grew to such a great status that he's already greater or equal to his Rebbe. Such an individual is called a Talmud Chaver. Many Rishonim, the Marik disagrees with that pshat. Because the Marik says, if you're a Talmud of someone, you remain a Talmud forever. Even if you grow to be equal or greater than your Rebbe, you still are a Talmud. And rather, he explains what is the definition of a Talmud Chaver, that really they're colleagues, they learn together in yeshiva. But sometimes you don't only learn from your Rebbe. Sometimes you learn from your Chavrusa. Sometimes you learn from your Kot Talmidim. That's the definition of a Talmud Chaver. Shalch Matam. What's going to happen in our Gemara, we're going to start the Sugya, and it will be continued in tomorrow's Shir, is that the Gemara was aware that there was a halacha sent from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laretz, a halacha in Dinei Mominus, which is a very difficult halacha to understand. They just didn't know which halacha it was. So what the Gemara attempts to do is identify which is that halacha, and also identify what is the difficulty with that halacha. Shalch mitam. So the Gemara takes the first jab at it. Ben shalav b'nechsei aviv, the son borrows money against his father's assets, b'chaya aviv, while this person's father was alive, umeis, and then the son, that means let's just get the story straight. We have Yaakov, Ruvain, and Ruvain's son Chanoich, and Ruvain borrowed money against Yaakov's assets, and then Ruvain dies before Yaakov dies. But now, Ruvain's son Chanoich might smiyad alakuchas could take the assets back. So v'zui kosh b'dinim mamas, and this is a difficult halacha to understand. Ask the Gemara, love him, I map it. If he borrowed money, what's he taking? Void lakuchas ma'avidatei. Where did anybody buy anything? This doesn't make any sense, says the Gemara, and we're actually not even going to dwell on it. There's some Rishonim don't even have the skirs in the Gemara because the words don't even make any sense. Aliyatmar, if there's a halacha that's difficult to understand, hakiyatmar. We have the following situation. We've discussed such a situation. Ben shemach benichsi aviv b'chaya aviv. A son is supposed to get the assets of his father. He's supposed to get the property of his father. The father will die. When Yaakov will die, Reuven will be his yairish. And what Reuven did was he sold those properties that he was the potential yairish of. And now, Reuven dies before his father Yaakov. So we had Reuven selling properties that belonged to Yaakov before Yaakov died. And then Reuven dies. Can't make plans in life. And then Yaakov dies. And now who is the Yairish of Yaakov? The Yairish of Yaakov is Reuven's son, Chanoich. So the halach is, B'noi Moitz Miyad Al-Kuchas. Since Reuven really had no right to sell these properties, because he never was the owner of these properties, he thought he'd be the owner of the properties, but his plans didn't come to fruition, therefore the halach is that Chanoich could go to the people who bought the property from his father Reuven and take it back. Machloikus Rishayim, what does it mean that Reuven's son Chanoich could go to those individuals that bought these properties from his father Reuven? Some say he could go to them and say, my father never had a right to sell them. And you who bought it from my father bought something that my father didn't own. Give me back the property and I have no obligation to pay you the money that you gave my father. That's one pshat in the Rishayim. Another pshat in the Rishayim is not as serious. Certainly, they say, what the Gemara means is that Reuven's son Chanoich could go to the people who bought this property from their father Reuven and say, my father never got this property. He had no right to sell this property. And therefore, I'm claiming back the property. But the money you gave my father, I have to give you back. And says the Gemara, v'zui shikasha b'dinim amnis. And this is the difficult halach in dinim amnis. Why? Because the lekuchas, those individuals who bought these property from Reuven, should be able to argue, says the Gemara. Your father sold us this property, and you're trying to undo the sale that my father did, that your father did. So to my question, what kind of claim is that? That these lekuchas can make the Chanoich to Reuven's son. Duma, why can't Chanoich say, Matzah mekoich avu de abba kosina? I'm not coming here as a Yerush of my father. He says to Lekuchas, if I was a Yerush of my father, then you have a very valid claim. But I'm not a Yerush of my father. I'm a Yerush of my grandfather. That we don't look at the Yerusha as going from Yaakov to Reuven who's dead, then to Chanoich who's still Baruch Hashem alive. But if Reuven is no longer alive, and then Yaakov dies, and Yaakov has no other children, we're keeping the story simple. The Yerusha goes directly from Yaakov to Chanoich. And what's the raya? Tell the Ksiv, Tachas Avasecho Yibanecho, Tishisema Lasarim Bechola Oritz. That your grandchildren directly Yarshan the grandfather, not that it goes through the dead father. Machloitis Rishayim, is this specifically in the case of our Gemara, where grandson is yashining a grandfather, or is it in any case of Yerusha? Which means as follows. Let's say somebody died. We spoke about this case many times in the previous parak. Somebody passed away. He had no children. So his Yerush is his father, but his father also is no longer alive. So then his brothers are his Yerushim. Do we also say in such a situation that the brothers are considered the direct Yerushim of the dead, of the deceased? But since there, it's brothers, it's not children, it's not grandchildren, it's not direct descendants, we wouldn't say the same concept. Machlokes Rishayim. Ask the Rishash. Fascinating Rishash. The Gemara is trying to prove that grandchildren are direct Yarsha from the grandfather. How would he come to that proof? From the Pasuk of Tachas Avasecho Yibanecho. Why does the Pasuk say, why does the Gemara add the word Tishisema Lesarim Becholaritz? What does that have to do? Says the Rishash, it's interesting because it's relevant la locha, that the Gemara is teaching us that grandchildren yash and a grandfather, not only the money, that means if a grandfather passes away and the father is no longer alive, then the grandchildren are the yashim of the money, they're also the yashim of the grandfather's position. That means, we discussed this in the previous parak, that a father, if the father is a rov, the Yerusha goes to his son. Let's say the son is no longer alive. Then that Yerusha, just like the Yerusha of the money, goes to the grandchildren, the Yerusha of the grandfather's position goes to the grandchildren. Of course, says the Rishash, they have to be worthy of the position. And I saw, based on this, a very interesting question. question comes up as follows. There's someone who passed away. He didn't have any sons. He had a daughter who was married. He had a son-in-law, a daughter and a son-in-law. And he had grandchildren from that daughter. And this person who passed away was a Rav. Who has first claim on the Rabbanus? Do we say that the son-in-law? Because who is the real Yorish here? The real Yorish, if somebody dies without sons, we learned in the previous parak, that the daughter is the Yorish. But the daughter can't Yorish in the Rabbanus, so it goes to her husband. Or do we say, suggest the Paiskim, that as far as the Rabbanus is concerned, she's not a Yorish, because a daughter can't Yorish in. So as far as the Rabbanus is concerned, we look at it like a situation as somebody who didn't have any children, only had grandchildren, that the halacha is that the Yerusha goes to the grandchildren if they're no children. As far as the Rabbanus is concerned, he has no children, because the daughter is not a potential Yerush for the Rabbanus. And therefore the daughter's sons would have precedence, would go before their father, who's only a son-in-law of the Rav. It's a very interesting machlokes apaiskim. Many paiskim make the argument that I just said, that a daughter as far as the Rabbanus has no claim to the Yerusha. Others say that since she is alive, and she is the primary Yerush, so she's the Yerush of the Rabbanus. She can't be the Rav, so her husband could take her place, Ishta Kegufoy, and be the Rav.